Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, we talk with columnist Jefferson Graham about his 36 years at USA Today.
You know, whether that be spending a week with Cosby in New York, whether that be interviewing a young comedian named Jerry Seinfeld at Hugo's over pumpkin pancakes, begging me to write about his low-rated TV show, whether that's Tim Allen about to star in Home Improvement, and the National Enquirer has a scoop that he was in prison for selling cocaine, and he wants to get ahead of the story, so he chooses me to tell the story to. Now, one interview threw me for a loop. I was interviewing Halle Berry, and she's really nice to me. And in the middle of the interview, she says, "But enough about me. I want to hear all about you."
Today on the show, we talk with columnist Jefferson Graham about his 36 years at USA Today.
Hey, my name is Jefferson Graham, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, I hope you guys enjoyed the show last week by actor Mark Tyche. Mark Tyche, T-E-I-C-H, that's the last name. He is so funny. And he's on this new show called The Finchers. You can go to finchers.com and find that new sitcom. It's really cute. But Mark tells a story about getting stabbed in Santa Monica. Have you heard it? Did you hear it, Jeff?
I got the email. I haven't heard it yet.
It's really good. He was a bartender at one of the restaurants there on the promenade. And there was an altercation at the bar, and nobody was doing anything about it. So he jumps in, and guess who got stabbed? I mean, it's like super intense. So go back, you guys, and listen to Mark Tyche on Storyworthy last week, but not today, because today it's the end of the year, 2020, shittiest year on record. But I am excited to be here with my friend Jefferson Graham. You guys know Jefferson Graham. He has been a columnist at USA Today, the newspaper, for 36 years. It's just astounding. And today we're talking about that. He's 36 years at USA Today. And I guess I just laughed, Jefferson, right off the bat, because when I was a flight attendant, USA Today, that's the paper we had on the news, on the airplane. You know, that was the paper. And there were so many USA Todays in my life. Like, it was the paper on the airplane. And then also in the hotels I stayed in, there would always be a USA Today coming underneath the door in the morning. And it was just such a, I mean, Mickey Mouse newspaper. I mean, I guess it still is, right? It's like big blocks of color.
I don't know that I'd go for Mickey Mouse.
Sorry. I mean, you led your whole career here. I'm sorry.
News you could use. Stuff that was of interest, that wasn't pompous, that wasn't stuff we think you should read, stuff that you're interested in.
Okay. So that was the premise of USA Today. Or it is the premise. I mean, the newspaper's still out there.
Yes, it is. And the website is still out there, and the website is hopping.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. It's just so funny because I guess what I'm saying is they give you such small snippets of the story. So they could talk about, you know, the crisis in the Middle East, and it's about five sentences.
Once upon a time, when you go back to 1984, it's not that way now.
Okay. Listen, USA Today is a fine establishment, and you have led your entire career there. And I can't imagine how fortunate you must feel to be leaving on the note that they're buying you out, right? Isn't that the deal?
Yes, they are. I've chosen when to say goodbye. Like Jerry Seinfeld, let's leave on top. And I'm taking that same attitude. And really, I mean, it's a tough decision, but I'm really, really happy I made it and looking forward to 2021.
Yeah, me too.
And new things, yes.
Yeah, but let me ask you, so did USA Today, are they scaling back or did they do this every year?
Every 2 years, they have buyout programs,
I've
bypassed several of them. And this year was interesting because years past, it would go to select people that were over a certain age. This year, it just went to everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody qualified.
Wow. And you've, of course, been working from home this last year pretty much, yeah?
I've been working from home since 1993.
Oh, wow. But wait a second, yeah. Jefferson. I went to your offices once in Century City.
Near Culver City, I was visiting because you were coming.
Oh, wow. You were just showing off your fancy office.
Yeah, primarily I've been working at home. I did build a podcast studio there. So I probably said, come on over to the podcast studio.
Yeah. That was it. Because you were doing Talking Tech there.
Yes, I was.
Yeah. It's just funny because when I was there, I remember it was, and this is before COVID and everything, but there was like nobody there. And it was a huge office. I mean, I felt like I was looking at 10,000 square feet of desks and cubicles and nobody was there.
I think they were out doing stories.
All of them.
Yes, everybody.
Okay. I'm just curious. Sometimes it's funny, like, you know, being in the entertainment industry or whatever, like I don't have to go in elevators that often. I don't go in big buildings. I don't have to go to I don't know how to explain it. Like serious places of work, like maybe a lawyer's office or like you, a journalist's office. I don't often find myself in those buildings. And so for me, it was interesting.
Yeah. It also could depend on the time and the day. And maybe the entertainment people were out late the night before doing parties.
Right. So, no, it's very interesting. 36 years at USA Today. I find like, does anybody even work 36 years at any job anymore?
I would say it's unprecedented and I can't see it happening again. It's one of those flukes. I don't know how it happened. I mean, one thing is that the bosses were in Washington, D.C. area and I was out here. So there was no potential for big blowups when they don't see you.
And the idea is just stay under the radar. In other words, if you're not called on, you're doing fine.
Right. Yeah. That's a lot. And my direct boss was always somewhere else until 2 years ago. Yeah. Till 2 years ago, my direct boss was always in another location, whether that be San Francisco, whether that be Virginia, whether that be New York. So that was pretty great. I would recommend that to anybody.
Yeah, no kidding. So one time my dad, when he retired, he became an actor. He had all of his teeth and beautiful white hair. Looks like Dick Van Dyke, just a super handsome man. And so I submitted his headshot, right? He had those black and white headshots. I submitted one to USA Today for him to get into that column at the back of the paper called What Do You Think or something. It was like a, what's that called?
Yeah.
What's that called?
It doesn't exist anymore, but it's the Man on the Street column.
Yeah, it was the Man on
the
Street.
Across the USA.
It's called Across the Nation, I think, whatever. And so they would ask a question, and then they'd put pictures of the five people that answer and then their answers. And so my dad got chosen once, and it was something about like, it was a question that it was strange. Like, do you want to be in an earthquake or a tornado? It was like that. And so my dad says something, and the point is when my dad saw himself in the newspaper, he like lost his mind. We were in Pittsburgh and we go to the Giant Eagle. He didn't know that it was going to be in the paper, what day it was going to be in. So we go to the Giant Eagle, which is a supermarket in Pittsburgh. And I pick up the USA Today and there's my dad's face. And he just lost it. He bought like every paper in the store. He went around to all the tellers and said, this is me. This is me. It was adorable.
Well, I'm glad for him.
Yeah. All right. So USA Today. Well, I'm anxious to hear your story, but I also wanted to give a big shout out to some of my incredible listeners. Jeff, you know, I've been doing this show for 10 and a half years now, and you're like episode 655, I think. And I've had a couple of listeners who have followed me the entire time. And I'm like so impressed. So I just wanted to shout out a few names. Tracy Varana, big fan. Dave Bichek, another guy who's always listening. Stu Gillickson is always listening. Mary Beth Bakehouse. Is that it? Mary Bakehouse. Anyways, so many incredible people. And I'm just so grateful for every listener. And I send out my mailing list goes out on Tuesdays and people write me back and it makes me feel so warm inside that people are actually hearing me and my voice is getting across and people are listening. And I'm very grateful. So although 2020 was, you know, pretty sucky, I got a lot done, to tell you the truth, being home here and my daughter being with me and, A lot got accomplished and more exciting stuff is coming in 2021, including my new podcast.
Yes, which sounds great.
Thanks. It's called My Life in Three Songs. My Life in Three Songs with me. And it's going to be people, comedians primarily, telling me about three songs from their life that really stay with them. So That's coming up, you guys, but I don't have a launch date, but I will. You'll see. And Story Smash, the storytelling game show, is going really strong every Friday night on Facebook and YouTube at 7 p.m. Pacific time. Blanka Patch is there every week. Danny Zucker, I've had on Melissa Peterman, Kira Sultanovich, just some incredible talent. So you guys got to check out Story Smash. Jeff, you came and saw it at the Improv.
That's right. Well, not only that, but I was on it, wasn't I? What's the one you do? We did an online version.
Oh, yeah.
The game show.
Yeah, the game show. We did do it online. Yeah, we've done, you know, I've been doing Story Smash for 11 years, and I've had so many different, you know, I don't, how do I say it? Like different formations, different schematics. I don't know how to say it, but now we're playing and it's really sticking because this is every Friday night, 7 p.m., four contestants, three expert judges, only two rounds of the show. It moves very quickly. We laugh our butts off and we're using a new platform I discovered called StreamYard. Have you heard of that one?
Of course.
Yeah. And that's really good for this game show. So you guys check it out Friday nights live on Facebook and YouTube, Story Smash, the storytelling game show. And one more thing, and then we're going to get to Jeff's story. One more thing, you guys. The story where the Hour of Power is happening at Flappers Comedy Club. It's virtual, but it is the third Sunday of every month. And one cool thing about, you know, that show is it's me and four other storytellers telling 10-minute stories in 1 hour. It's all comedians. And one thing that's really cool is I'm reaching people that I never would have reached had I just done it at Flappers. You know, if I did it at Flappers, I could have got in maybe 60, 70, 80 people. But now, in some cases, it's over 200 people, and they're in different countries.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, I really think there's going to be like a virtual presence of entertainment no matter what.
Zoom is not going away. It's gotten too comfortable to not leave the house and not get dressed and not get a babysitter and not drive across town and not look for parking. And it's, you know, and you always get a bit, you're going to get a bigger crowd, always.
Yeah. You know, I also have been working for Skylight Bookstore for over 15 years, and I host a lot of their virtual events. And it's the same thing. At Skylight, we could fit 65 people. And now there's rooms with 300, 350 people. And there's authors in Sweden and Australia. And we're talking to people that love books all over the world. It's really cool.
Yeah. I remember going on book tours and flying to places.
That's what I mean. Like, why would an author do that anymore?
Yeah.
Wow. Things are changing. Well, anyway, you guys, I am super happy again. Thank you so much for supporting me, following Storyworthy, joining my mailing list, going to the YouTube page. You know all that stuff. I really appreciate it. And here comes an incredible guy. Now, Jefferson, you've been on the show before.
Yes, I have.
I forget what we talked about. Do you remember?
I think it was my worst interview and best interview, probably.
Oh, that's right. That was really good. Those were really good because you've had, you know, you've interviewed thousands of people. That was a great episode.
Actually, it's 10,000.
10,000.
We came up with the number yesterday, 10,000 interviews.
That's unbelievable. Dude, that's seriously, that is so impressive. If I gathered up all my different shows and everything I've done, it would be over 1,000, but it wouldn't, I mean, oh my God, 36 years. Unbelievable. This is exciting. He's here right now, you guys, Jefferson Graham. He's a writer and a columnist. He's also a photographer, an amazing photographer. Jeff, you have got to open up a gallery in Manhattan Beach. It's like, how can you not?
One of these days, we'll get to it.
I mean, your photographs are stunning and you take photographs constantly. You know, it's funny. I think there's photographers that, well, I know there's photographers that still make a tremendous amount of money on pictures that were taken hundreds of years ago, obviously. Ansel Adams or, you know. But you continue to take pictures. You take you photograph every single day. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Every day you go to the beach at 5:30, 6 a.m. Is that true?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why not? It's a mile from my house. It's a nice 2 hour walk.
2 hour walk. It's only 20 minutes.
No, but I don't go there and then go come home. I walk around. Yeah.
I was going to say it took you two hours to walk a mile.
No, it takes 20 minutes to get there.
I get it. Your photos are truly spectacular and always a little bit different. You know, you keep showing that picture of the Manhattan Pier, but it's always a little different. The light is a little, a little this or a little that. And then you're so kind to share your knowledge and you teach people for free all the time on your fabulous...
On my newsletter, JeffersonGraham.substack.com, my newsletter.
Yeah. JeffersonGraham.substack.com. And your newsletter, you're constantly giving tips and telling people, you know, where's the best to stand, where to go, where to be. And of course, you're using all of Southern California. Because sometimes I think like, let's see Jefferson Graham get those photos in Pittsburgh. You know what I'm saying?
I'd love to. When can we go?
You would though. You would get wonderful pictures because you would do all this, the bridges and all the rivers. Yeah. I know. I'm just saying sometimes with a subject as the Pacific Ocean, you know, and all these piers we have in Southern California.
Yeah.
You got yourself a nice composition. That's all I'm saying.
I would agree with you. It's amazingly photogenic and warm most times too. That's also good.
And the light is so nice here. The light is so crisp, even if it's dim or bright.
We've had 3 weeks of unbelievable sunsets.
I know. I've watched every one of them. I know. Unbelievable. Listen, you also, as you know, are a musician, and I'm so impressed with your jazz guitar playing. I can't even believe how simple it looks to you. You make it look so effortless. And you're not like, you know, you're not probably the best jazz musician I've ever heard, but you're so good and you know so many songs, and I can say a song and you just play it. And that just endlessly impresses me. And this morning I was listening to you play How Deep Is Your Love, which can be so cheesy, but then you put your little spin on it and damn good, man. It's just, you're really, really talented.
Well, thank you. The Bee Gees documentary on HBO Max inspired me to go play.
Yeah. I like that documentary. It was about 2 hours too short to me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Way too short. I mean, they're giving like one sentence, you know, Andy Gibb had a heart attack and he died. Okay. Moving on.
Yeah.
I know. And I'm like, fuck, he was only 30. What do you mean? You know? Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it was drug inspired or whatever, but who was he with? What happened? Did he overdose? Did he go to the hospital? Was he found dead? You know, so that was a little frustrating. And also, I was such a big Andy Gibb fan. I had his poster on my wall, you know, and I don't know. I wanted to see more of that. Well, you know, look.
Oh, and sibling rivalry. They did not get into sibling rivalry. Barry got to sing pretty much every song. And was so great looking. How did Robin and Maurice feel about that?
Yeah.
And why does Barry get to sing every song? Why don't I get to sing, you know?
Was Robin and Maurice, were they twins?
They were twins who didn't look alike.
They were fraternal twins.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying, they didn't talk a lot about that in terms of.
And I know that at the end of their lives, Barry wasn't speaking to either of them. And that was something that they might have mentioned and might have explored a little bit.
Oh, God, that's so sad. I didn't realize that. They both died of cancer. One was lung cancer.
No. Robin died of cancer. Maurice died of some stomach ailment that went awry.
I see. Was it lung cancer?
I don't know.
It doesn't matter. Anyway, it was good though. I mean, I liked it. Certainly, I certainly wouldn't have missed it, but I'm just saying I would have added a few more things. I would have added more B's and more G's. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, good idea. Let's do a second volume.
We should do that. All right, you guys. Also, Jefferson, he's a video maker, and you can find him over at jeffersongraham.net. And then, like he said, you can join his mailing list at jeffersongraham.substack.com. And also, check him out on YouTube, man. I'm telling you, if you want to learn how to take photographs, specifically in Southern California, at all the beach towns, all of our piers, Jefferson Graham, he's your man. Check it out. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for the very talented Jeff Graham.
Thank you. And as long as we were plugging, let me just let one more plug. Photo Walks, the series, the video series that Christine was on with me in Silver Lake, is new and improved, expanded editions going to Amazon February 19th.
Wow.
6 new half-hour episodes. Portugal, Hawaii, Central California coast, the Oregon coast, downtown Los Angeles, Catalina Island.
Wow.
So be sure to check it out.
You are like the photographer, like Phil Rosenthal has got us covered with food now all around the world. You are covering us with photography.
Yes. Instead of saying, here's what to do, here's what to see, here's what to see through my camera eye.
Yeah. Wow.
And
that's really specific. Let me ask you one thing real quick. Your wife, Ruth, does she play into any of your ambitions?
She loves to cook, and she's blogging as well at ruthtalksfood.blogspot.com.
Nice.
And she does enjoy taking photos when we go to amazing places.
Good, good. All right. Okay, let's hear the story.
The story is that this is my final week at USA Today after 36 and a half years. And it's very weird. It's very odd that it should just be ending this like this. I'm excited about what's happening next, but I don't know what next week is going to feel like. Let me take you back to 1984, July 9th, 1984, the first day of the Republican convention, Reagan's second term. I rode my bicycle from West LA to Westwood, where the bureau was in the old Security Pacific Bank building on the ninth floor. And I went up and I was told to write the TV column and have it done by 12. I don't remember what I wrote. I remember that every other character was capitalized. And I had a really hard time with this contraption that I was typing on, which was, it was called an audio coupler or something like that. And you would type on it and then you would pick up the phone receiver and then you would stick it in these two cups. And then 45 minutes later, your story would arrive to the main office, which was in Roslyn, Virginia.
How did you get the job, though?
Ah, okay. So, very quick thumbnail. I worked at the Glendale News Press as a news reporter in Glendale, which is a suburb of Los Angeles. Then I went to the Hollywood Reporter, one of the two big trade publications, Hollywood Reporter and Variety, and I covered cable TV and video. And after that, I got a call from the executive producer of Entertainment Tonight. His name is Jack Riley, I believe. And he said, I'd love to meet you at the Brown Derby and talk to you about your career. So we went to the Brown Derby, the old, old restaurant in the top hat. What was it? It was in a derby hat, right? And we met after work and he said, how would you like to have your salary doubled? I need a guy like you at Entertainment Tonight. Well, who's going to turn that down, right? So I said, sure. And I quit the Hollywood Reporter. I went to work at Entertainment Tonight in April of 1984. It was in the Merv Griffin building, TAV, the Merv Griffin TAV building on Vine and Sunset. The theater is still there. They used to do the Hollywood Palace there. No, it was something else. Anyway, so I worked there. I was hired to be a news reporter, an off-air news reporter to give them scoops. And when I walked in the door, Jack said, this is Bridget. You're working for her. And she couldn't have been nastier to me. She was, did not like me because she didn't hire me. Jack hired me. And Jack told me I was working for Jack. But no, I was working for Bridget. And it just fell from there. I knew it was a bad fit. And I couldn't wait to leave. I looked at the clock every day. When will it get to 12 so I can go to lunch? And save myself. So I was I went to some industry event. I don't remember what it was, and I can't remember. But I ran into a woman named Susan Spillman who worked at Advertising Age, and my wife Ruth worked at Advertising Age. So I was friendly. I knew Susan, and I was telling her how miserable I was. She told me that her boyfriend Ben Brown was the TV editor at USA Today, and I should call him. So I did, and I said, can I freelance for you? And he said, sure. And I started writing some articles for USA Today. The first one, dictators are hot.
What? What?
Okay. There are miniseries in the works about Mussolini and Stalin, and they're hot. We want to watch them. That was my first article for USA Today. And I wish I had a copy of it, but I don't. Or if I do, I don't know where it is. So from that, I was able to parlay more articles and more articles, and my 13-week contract at Entertainment Tonight was coming up for a renewal, and I said, come on, guys, I'd really like to work for you, but you have to tell me before I get renewed, and they hired me. I took a pay cut to go there, but I didn't care. I was just so happy to leave Entertainment Tonight, and I was always a massive television fanatic. If you had said to me back then, what's on ABC Tuesday night at 9:30, I could tell you. And I used to collect TV guides.
Oh, my God.
I mean, They were great too. I mean, they were just so beautiful. So I collected TV guides, and so it was really a great job. I covered the networks, and I covered, you know, I interviewed stars and talked to producers and network execs. I also covered movies. Well, that wasn't as good because there was an attitude in the movie industry that, you know, a movie, you know, you could not be a TV star and work in a movie because the TV star is below a movie star, mm-hmm. right? So that whole attitude was there. But I ran with it. I loved it. If you want to talk the shows, you know, every Cheers, Seinfeld, Night Court, Family Ties, The Cosby Show, everything, Murphy Brown, all the great 80s and 90s shows, I was there.
You were there, but what does it mean you were there? You were writing about them?
I was in, whether that be spending a week with Cosby in New York, whether that be interviewing a young comedian named Jerry Seinfeld at Hugo's over pumpkin pancakes, begging me to write about his low-rated TV show, whether that's Tim Allen about to star in Home Improvement, knowing that this is going to be the biggest series of the year at that time, Tuesdays at 8:30, and the National Enquirer has a scoop that he was in prison for selling cocaine, and he wants to get ahead of the story, so he chooses me to tell the story to.
First of all, okay, so you got to slow down because you're burying the lead. Of course, we want to hear every one of those stories. So go with Tim Allen. Let's hear that.
Tim Allen, I was chosen as the vehicle for him to tell his story and come clean and get it out before the Enquirer.
And so what is his story? Do you remember it?
Yeah, he was in prison for 2 years for selling cocaine back when his name was Tim Dick.
His name was Tim Dick?
Yes.
Oh, gosh, this is getting really bad. And so how old was Tim Dick when he sold cocaine?
Post-college.
I wonder if he ever talks about that on stage. I
mean, this is well-known. This is well-known
story. I didn't know that.
Yeah, okay. This is a well-known story.
Okay.
And remember when all the new sitcoms were based on a comedian's act?
Of course. Yeah, they were giving them out at LAX.
Right. Okay. So his act was based on his Showtime special as the Tool Time guy. Yeah. And so Home Improvement was going to be the biggest show of the year. Everybody knew it. And I was hauled into a conference room at Disney, and he came in and he told me, you know, two publicists on the side. He told me his story. I wrote it up. If you check out any of the Tim Allen coverage of that time, you'll see my headline.
That's so interesting. So what was your headline?
I don't remember.
I know, but I mean, what was the point? It was like Tim Allen has done crimes. He admits it and he's moving on. So let's get over it. Was it like that?
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
On the eve of the premiere of what all the analysts say will be the biggest new show of this season.
Right.
Tim Allen is clearing the air and coming clean.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. But it's so funny that he chose you. I wonder how he chose you.
Chose USA Today.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And right. I was the TV guy. So
yeah. I get it. And so then same with Jerry Seinfeld, obviously. Hugo's is that diner. I know exactly where it is. And you were sitting with him eating pancakes. And what is he saying?
Well, they arrange a breakfast so I could meet this young comedian. Please come meet him. He's got this low-rated show on NBC that nobody's watching. Just meet him. Just talk to him. Just hear him out. And we had a lot of that. Just meet them. Get to know them.
I mean, did you have the best job in the world or what? I mean, this is unbelievable.
It was really exciting. But, you know, for every Jerry Seinfeld, there were other people that weren't as exciting. You know, I'll give you one. Now, Patrick Stewart is fantastic. Okay, we love Patrick Stewart. I love him. And I went to interview him. And the pressure of all the I had to write an article every day. So I had to write an article every day. And for Seinfeld, you could watch 20-minute sitcom and be prepped on it and go see him. But when Patrick Stewart is doing a 4-hour miniseries on Moby Dick, I don't have 4 hours. It's just not there, you know? And so you watch 5 minutes of it or whatever, and you go over and you go talk to him. And then he says, what do you think of it? What do you think of the show, Jeff? Oh, it's great. Yeah, it's great. You really liked it. Oh, yeah. Oh, it's fantastic. Oh, what did you think about this part? Yeah, it worked. And somehow I got around it. You know, there were other times when you couldn't get around it, but it was a little uncomfortable. I should just say, I don't know. Is it easier to just say I didn't see it? I didn't have the time to watch you.
the right thing. No, I think he did the right thing because, you know, they're not considering, does he have time to watch it? They're thinking it's his job to watch it. So of course he will. It, for me, it's when I'm supposed to read a whole book in 2 days or something, yeah. You know, the book ones are a little harder for me, but I do, although I love to read, I will skim it for sure, whatever the book might be. But yeah, to watch a 4-hour miniseries.
But when you're interviewing a different actor every day and going back and writing it for the next day, that's a little hard. That's just hard, you know?
So it had to be a different actor every day.
Actor, producer, director, writer, network exec. This is something. I had to write something every day at 3:00.
Right. Wow. So interesting. Okay. Keep going.
And that was deadline. Deadline back then was 3. Deadline now is now. It's always. I mean, the deadline never ends.
Yeah. Because there's no more programming of news and stuff, right? As it were.
Back then you wrote for the TV page. At 3:00, that got edited and laid out at 5 and got printed the next morning. And now it's to the point where, let's say, Apple just announced the new iPhone, okay? And they didn't have an event, but they put out a press release. Well, you have to write that press release, rewrite the press release, 3 or 4 paragraphs, and post it immediately and say, developing story, we'll be back with more.
Wow. Yeah.
That's how it works now.
Yeah. And so let's keep going with the stuff about all the celebrities, because at some point I know in your career you moved to the tech stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I got tired of the interviewing celebrities. It just got got monotonous because the 5 questions were, tell me about your new show. Mm-hmm. Tell me about your character. Are you like him? Mm-hmm. How did you get into show business? And who are you screwing?
You would say who are you dating?
Yes. And some people did not like that.
Yeah. It's so interesting. You know, I don't think people realize that you only see a star or a celebrity when they're pitching. You know, that's when you see them. Otherwise, they're not like talking about the other 360 days of the year. They're talking about, you know, this one thing each time.
Yeah. Yeah. If you said, was he nice? Everybody was nice. Everybody was nice to me. Yeah. Because they wanted the attention.
They want to work again.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody was nice except for the Joel McHale, who we talked about in a previous episode, who was upset with me because I hadn't watched Community. Right. I came in, I did my research, I was doing talking tech. I did the research, what does he do online? What is his tech? What does he like to do? Does he use an app? Is he on Twitter? Does he talk on Twitter? Does he have a YouTube channel? That's what I was looking at.
I know, but you think you assumed all that just because of the title. You said, I'm coming over and interview Joel McHale about my show, Talking Tech. So then does he think you're going to talk tech? Or maybe he thinks, no, you're going to talk about Community. I mean, why else would he do it for you? In other words, if you're talking tech, then he's doing you a favor. If you're talking Community, you're doing him the favor.
Yeah, well.
So why would he do a favor for you?
Well, because he's getting attention for Community by talking tech. That's what he's doing. Because he's still appearing and we're promoting him. And say, Joel McHale from Community. And, oh, hey, he's funny. Maybe I should watch Community the next time it's on. Right? I mean, that's the whole idea.
Now you're going to have to tell the audience. So what did he do that was so offensive?
Well, it was the Patrick Stewart story, but he caught on to me. He knew, he smelled it, he knew it, and he was not going to let go of it. And I don't blame him. If I were him, I would have done the same thing. I was in the wrong. He was in the right. There was no getting out of it. Jeff, what do you think Community is all about? And I say, a community. And he says, a community of what? Yeah, exactly. There was no getting out of it. And he was loving every minute of it.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
And then did it like explode or did you finally say, look, I'm so sorry. I haven't had a chance to watch it. What happened?
Oh, he knew. It was very clear. And, you know, I posted the piece without any of that stuff in it because it only made me look like a fool. It didn't make him look like a fool. And there was no point there. You know, Joel McHale made fun of me because I didn't do the research and watch his show. Yeah. Right.
I think it's really funny. Sorry.
No, one interview threw me for a loop. I was interviewing Halle Berry about her star turn as Dorothy Dandridge on an HBO movie. And she's really nice to me. And in the middle of the interview, she says, but enough about me. I want to hear all about you. How did you get into journalism? And it's like, I turn around. Who is she talking to? because nobody ever does that. Nobody. I spent 5 days with Bill Cosby in New York, and he never offered me a drink, and he never asked me about anything. It was him talking about himself.
Yeah. Oh, God. Oh, God. Well, first of all, I adore Halle Berry. She's like an angel. She's so talented. She's so interesting. But now we go to the whole other side. Bill Cosby, what was that all about? Ugh.
Okay. Well, first of all, Sammy Davis put me together with Bill Cosby when I was doing my book on Las Vegas. As Cosby would perform there at the Hilton all the time, Sammy played at Bally's. They were old friends. I did this book on Vegas where I interviewed all the old entertainers, Dean Martin, Engelbert Humperdinck, Tom Jones, Siegfried and Roy, Shecky Green, Don Rickles, all of them.
And are you serious, Jeff?
Yes.
I cannot believe who you've met. That is so interesting.
And that was, I mean, God, that was so much fun. And Wayne Newton.
Did somebody pay you to do that book, or was that your own endeavor?
No, I was paid. I didn't make money because I drove there every weekend for a year.
Oh my gosh. Wow. That's so interesting.
But it was a great experience. So Sammy put me together with Cosby. Cosby agreed to do an interview with me about Las Vegas. He said, meet me at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas running track. On a Saturday
morning.
I used
to run that track all the time because I was a flight attendant, and the La Quinta we stayed in was across from that track.
So he met me there and he said, let's go jogging. And I said, okay, I'm not a jogger, but I'm going to go running with Bill Cosby. And from that meeting, he said, come to New York, spend a week with me. I want you to see what it's like, how we put the show together and all the great things we do for education. The subtleties that he throws in there. Okay. So USAA agreed to send me there, and I spent a week with him. I think I went there 3 times.
Wow. And where did you stay? Where did he stay?
Well, I stayed in New York City. Now, the Cosby Show was being done in, I think, in Queens. Mm-hmm. So they would pick me up every morning to drive me out there.
Nice. Yeah. Oh, I know that studio, the same one they did Sopranos, I think, on.
Kaufman Astoria, I think.
Oh, no, that's not right. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, so I spent weeks with Cosby. He never asked me about myself, but he didn't. He liked that I liked jazz, and he loved jazz. So that was a common thing. And I never saw the bad side of him at that point, except that he's incredibly long-winded, and you couldn't dream of taping because it just went on and on and on to the point where when he got his Kennedy Center honor and he was standing on stage to accept it, you heard the cue music playing, and they ran the curtain down. They cut him off in the middle of his acceptance speech.
Wow. Wow. So he never asked about you. He never asked about anybody else. It was just about him. And
yeah.
He's just a
narcissist. Well, the general celebrity interview is, let me tell you about myself. Thanks for asking. And it just goes.
Well, yeah, but again, the general celebrity interview is because they're pitching something. Right. They're at work. They've That's got right. something to do. And they just want to move on so they can get to the next one, the next one, the next one, and go home or have dinner.
Well, I became friends with Jerry Van Dyke, who's Dick's brother. And he was on Coach as the second banana. It was another series from the 80s and 90s. It ran after Roseanne. And everybody said, nobody really likes Coach. It's just that it runs after Roseanne. That's the only reason people watch it. Do you remember those times when people would say it was a time slot hit because people were too lazy to turn the TV off after the show that they liked?
Well, sure, because you had to get up and do that. You didn't have a remote.
Right. And I thought it was a funny show, and I thought Jerry had to be a really interesting story. And I was going to do a cover story on Jerry. Back then, we did cover stories. They were 4 stories in every edition, the main story, biggest story. And I was going to do a big piece on Jerry, but I didn't tell him it was going to be a big piece because I didn't want him to feel bad if it didn't turn out to be a big piece. So I just
worked. Because that's not always your call, obviously.
It's not my call. You know, you hand it in and hope for the best. And we got the best. And it was a big story, and he loved every minute of it. He was so happy that he called me every day afterwards.
Oh, come on.
For the ratings, because he knew I had the ratings, and he wanted to read them. And then we went out a bunch of times. We went out for chicken pot pie at Millie's in the Valley, and to the point where he died last year, and I got invited to come to his funeral because he loved that article so much.
Oh, my gosh. That's unbelievable. And so you get an invitation. How does that happen?
Called. They called me.
Wow.
His widow called me, Shirley.
So interesting. How did the transition happen from when you were interviewing celebrities and then all of a sudden you got into tech? Because tech wasn't even a thing until the 90s.
Okay, so it's 2000 and I had interviewed every actor I wanted to interview and I wanted to move on. And what I was always told at USA Today was you're too valuable doing what you're doing. You can't go switch. But then there was this actual job posting to be a tech reporter. And I said, I'd like to be considered. Why don't you try me out? You're already paying me. The worst that could happen is I go back to TV. The best that could happen is you like me. And if you don't like me, go hire somebody else. So they said, sure. It was a 4-week tryout. I started, I don't remember the month. And I knew from the first hour, this was it. I've always been a nerd. Bought the first VCR, bought the first camcorder, always into this stuff. And I was going to CES as part of my USA Today duties, actually, before I started covering tech. That's the Consumer Electronics Show. I covered the birth of home video and the birth of cable. So it was a good fit. And now 2000, it's the year 2000. AOL has just bought Time Warner. People were shocked that a little internet company could own Time Magazine and the Warner Brothers studio. And right? So that's what was going on. And so everything was turning digital. Then that merger went south and then the bubble burst, but then it came back. And the big three companies for me then were AOL, Yahoo, and Microsoft. It was always, what are they doing? Hotmail and remember all that stuff. And then it morphed into Google. Apple was, they had 2.5% market share for computers.
And at that point, we're talking about the grape iMac, the lime iMac, those big colored machines.
Which were beautiful. I still have one. Yeah.
Do you really? How funny.
Well, I don't use it, but why would you throw that away? It's a classic.
Because I don't have space. It's all about space. Oh. I mean,
it's in my garage.
Okay. No, I'm seriously though, Southern California rent is very expensive. Everybody knows that. So when something comes in, basically something has to go. I mean, you just trade in and out your stuff. There's no storage. There's no storage.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say that for all the publicists who write me and say, we have something we want to send you as a token of our appreciation. I say, I have more tokens of appreciation than I'll ever need for the rest of my life. Why don't you give it to someone else? Because I don't have any room.
Why don't you give it to me and I'll donate it to the Story Smash winners. How about that?
Okay.
Okay. We'll do that. Deal. Okay, good.
We only have 5 days left, but we'll see what comes in.
Boy, oh boy. Do you think you're going to miss the phone calls, the emails, or are you just going to be like, oh my gosh, this is so exciting to be done?
Well, I think I'll still get them. I'm still going to be blogging and people are still going to reach out.
Yeah.
And it just won't be the same.
And you're still doing your photo walks, of course, and you're still going to do your mailing list, your photography, your jazz guitar. You are so, every day I can tell you live to the fullest, Jeff. I can tell.
Well, we try.
No, but I love that. You have two boys. They're grown, right?
One.
He's in Japan. Grown.
Yes.
So it's you and your wife, and you're living near in Southern California, near the coast, taking photos.
Living the dream. Living the dream.
Great life, man. Well, I am so happy to know you, and I feel so fortunate to have you as a tech friend because you've helped me multiple times.
Well, thank you. It's been great knowing you. It's been, 4 years now?
Yeah, at least. Why? What's good about knowing me, Jeff? Not to turn it around, but what?
Well, friendly.
Check.
Enthusiasm. Check. I don't think there's a newsletter I send out that you don't say, good job.
I do love the newsletter. I do.
Yeah. A morning tweet. You're there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great.
Aww.
You know?
Aww. Well, I'm really glad.
And of course, walking around Silver Lake with you. That was a memorable experience.
Definitely. We'll do Los Feliz, obviously. And then we should do Atwater Village too.
Yeah. I mean, who knew that Gelson's was the former Walt Disney studio?
Well, and more importantly, there's a wine bar, which is a blast when we're not in COVID.
Yeah.
Well, listen, thank you so much for coming on, Jefferson. I really appreciate it. Do you like, by the way, Jefferson or Jeff? I always go back
either, and forth. Either one is fine. Do they call you Chris? Do you ever go by Chris? No.
No. It's Chris. My father, he called me Christopher.
Mm.
I think, wanted another boy. There were five girls and a boy. And yeah, he called me Christopher. So that was okay, though. From him, it was okay.
Okay. Well, let's just remember, your enthusiasm for everything is amazing. I don't know anybody more enthusiastic who pours herself into this podcast and is just out there. And it's fantastic. And you do such a great job.
Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate it. Yeah, man. Always working, always moving forward. That's the goal. And 2021, I really do feel good about it. I really feel good about it. And I'm anxious to get the vaccine ASAP. I will be in line. Listen, head over to Twitter and follow Jeff over there as well. At
Jefferson Graham. And one more plug for Photo Walks coming to Amazon February 19th. Travel photography, all new, expanded, and you're going to love it.
Oh, man, I'm really excited. And when you're over on Twitter, guys, check me out too at Storyworthy. All right, you guys, one more time on behalf of the very talented Jefferson Graham. Thank you so much. This is great.
Thanks for having me again. This is fantastic.
All right, you guys, my name is Christine Blackburn saying, make it a Storyworthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.